The Pacific Group is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would be also helpful to you to contact an anonymous organization that more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and your understanding. Good evening. My name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by a main speaker. Speakers, please note you will be given 5-minute and 1-minute reminders when it is time for you to wrap up your talk. The first 10-minute speaker is going to be Eric W.
Okay. Hey, God bless. Alcoholic Eric. And my sobriety date is April 8th, 2001. Pacific Group is my home group. I have one in Canada too, Aloha Spirit. I have a sponsor. His name is Tim Kay. He's actually in the box right beside me, Tim. And I sponsor sponsors. And drinking started early in my family. For me particularly, I was the oldest kid. I had a Scottish father and a German mother, which makes me a cheap, stubborn drunk. But at eight years of age, I was given ginger ale and beer as a shandy. And it was sort of like the reward. And I was not interested in it. I was not interested in drinking like my parents. I wanted nothing to do with it. When I turned 15 years old, I got a part-time job in a restaurant. I was with the cool kids now at McDonald's. They had staff parties. I learned very quickly that I wasn't very good at drinking. Starting to drink early in the day was a very bad idea for me. I was a blackout drinker right from the get-go. I graduated to several restaurants. I ended up going through university waiting tables in a steakhouse. And when I finished university, I finished 3 years late. I was found sleeping underneath a bridge in a tunnel a block from our Alano Club here in Vancouver. And it wasn't good. And I was scared. And I was so scared I didn't drink for another week. And what happened in that week is on that night, the last night before I went to detox, I was on a date. And when I got out, I tracked that woman down and I moved in without asking. And it was an absolute relationship of convenience. She was very responsible. She paid all the bills. All the bills were in her name. Right. And I was in a loveless marriage for 17 years, of which there were two kids in that. The only thing we had in common was she was in wholesale clothing and I was a sample size. And that was it. That was all we had in common. She went her way. I went my way. We had these two beautiful kids and we basically took turns taking care of the kids while the other person was doing what they pursued in their life. For me, what I like to pursue was partying. I was quite good at it. I never considered myself like an alcoholic, like my business partner. He was a drunk. He had no joy. He drank to pass out. I didn't. I did things like I entertained our staff. I provided mushrooms, LSD, cocaine. I was a really good employer. That went on for a while. I started losing things. I started losing everything, all our investments, lost a home, lost the business, started at this new job. And I was on commission. So because of my irregular cash flow, I was in charge of debt and investments. I got that half right. And so I'm at this new job and we got this new woman working there and I'd never met anyone like her. She was happy. And the look in her eyes was unbelievable. She had on a Chanel blazer with a matching skirt and Prada shoes, great hairstyle. I wanted what she had and I was willing to go to any length to get it. And I would come in after lunch, I'd make a few comments. And she pulled me aside one day and I was upsetting the woman that was working with her. And she said, you know what? You're not very funny. And maybe you could refrain from making your dumb jokes. And I took great offense, but I walked by the next time. I say something else. A week later, I came in wearing the same suit. I was missing a shoe. She says to me, what illegal activities were you up to last night? I lose my temper. I hadn't told anybody yet. But what happened was I started leaning in every time I went near, and I'd ask questions and she'd say things. And I never met anyone that was just happy. And so I was very intrigued. And it really changed because she told me she had a dream about me. Thank you, God. And so I wanted to know what happened in the dream. And she goes, you know, this isn't the place. And I'd ask again, this isn't the place. And one day she goes, you know what? I'm going to go for coffee. Why don't you join me? And so I say, sure. And so off I go. And she goes, actually, I'm going to go for wheatgrass. I said, you know what? This is a temple. And so off I go. And she takes the time and she breaks her anonymity. She tells me the dream was that I was drinking and using drugs and was going to die. Wasn't the dream I was hoping to hear about. And what she did is she told me that I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. I said, stop. And I said, you're telling me I'm a drug and a, you know, an alcoholic. Please stop. And she goes, you know what? I didn't tell you anything. I told you my story and you related to everything. I'm like, oh my God. So I had to get rid of her. So I told her a fresh story just to offend her, stay away. And she said, you know what? That's okay. That's your disease. I don't judge you. And she goes, and if you could, we work together. When you go back to the office, please don't break my anonymity. I did.
It just depends on what I have.
What happened was I was so intrigued that I kept asking her questions. And she goes, look, I'm really busy. You know, I've got these two young kids. I don't have a lot of time. I work out at lunch. I said, can I go with you at lunch to work out? And I went for a run with her. I went for 7 runs and I joined AA. It was fantastic. So I'm going to my first meeting. I pull into the parking lot. It was a mind blow. It was the first meeting I'm ever at. And all the cars are shiny, washed, new, and paid for. I couldn't believe it. I walk in the meeting. Everyone is like wearing color. Everyone is pleasant. Everyone has like the whites of their eyes shining. And they said in that meeting, is there anybody new or coming back? And these people would stand up and they'd say their names and they'd say they're alcoholic. You know, I'm like, okay. So I stand up. I say, my name's Eric. I'm an alcoholic. And I went home and I had the best sleep of my life. It changed everything. The weight of the world came off my shoulders. And in that meeting, the basket came around and the person beside me put their hand over the basket. They said, we don't want your money. We'll explain after. I said, okay, I got to hear this. I go, what happens there with the money? They go, oh, we don't accept outside contributions. I go, what do I have to do to give you my money? They go, you have to join. I go, how do I join? They go, we know a great meeting on Sunday. Meet us at 10 o'clock. And I went there and they said, go to the secretary, give your name, your sobriety date, and your phone number, and you've joined the meeting. But they said, for a person like you, that's not good enough. You need to go to the business meeting. And so I said, okay, when's that? And they told me the next Sunday. I went and here I am. And the person beside me elbows me when they say, do we need any greeters? My little arm goes up and I get asked to be a greeter. They don't trust the way I am. They gave me a script. So I would literally like read a script as people came to the door. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Please take, grab yourself a coffee and take a seat. I'm glad you're here. And then a month later, I went to another business meeting. And what happened at that business meeting, they said, we need somebody to set up. I've never been on time in my entire life. They gave me the keys. So I'm like, this is an amazing organization, just the way they recognize talent. And so they've given me the keys. I get angry at the group. 2 weeks into this job, I have a resentment. I decide I'm not going to set it up. So I come to the meeting 10 minutes before. This guy walks out. He goes, can you believe it? The janitor left the door open. We got the meeting set up on time. Oh my God, AA is bigger than me and will go on without me. Another great lesson. I go to the next business meeting and what happens there is they need a secretary. What happens, I get voted in to be the secretary. And what happens at the meeting was there's a person I really respected that didn't like the format of that. What they said was, God, that takes a long time. What I heard was you have to change it for them to like you. I changed the entire format. I didn't follow the script. They booed me. They also never wanted to have anyone with that little sobriety again to be secretary of the meeting. I learned another lesson in our traditions. But another thing that happened very quickly in that sobriety was there was a gentleman named Milton Merle, and he was a former member of the Pacific Group. And he saw me at a meeting. He walked up to me and he whispered in my ear. He says, you know what? I know you're full of it. And it changed my life. This is the first place I didn't have to lie to you about who I was. And it was just amazingly freeing. There was just like one version of me, and that's all you cared about. And you told me things like, We really don't care what you say. We care what you do. And it carried on. And I'm telling you, I've had the greatest ride in AA. That marriage I had, I was judging people in AA very harshly, actually, because they couldn't keep their marriages together. And I finished doing that. And then my wife served me papers. So that went out the window. Don't judge, please. You get to experience. And then what happened is that person that had 12-stepped me, well, she's sitting right here.
Oh, my goodness.
And what happened is I professed my love to her. We courted. We went, she said, you know, we're going to court. I said, okay, I'm in. And so she said, what that means is we're going to go in public places, go to meetings, have coffee, go to a movie theater, not at my place, all that stuff. And what it really means if you're new here is we're not going to have sex for 90 days. If you agree not to have sex with a woman that looks as good as my wife, Linda, you have hit rock bottom. I did. I lasted the 90 days. We got together. I've had an amazing time. I had a sober wedding. And I'd like to say thank you so much. God bless. I am so grateful. I'm a member of the Pacific Group. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Eric. Enjoyed that. Our second 10-minute speaker is going to be Karen T.
Hi, Karen Alcoholic. The way I feel right now is exactly why I drank. My shoulders are tight. My stomach is in knots. Thanks, Marty. Thank you, Eric, for your share. I didn't really hear anything because I was too busy thinking about what I was going to say. But I just heard you're not funny. And thanks to AA, you have a wonderful life. I first would like to say, Marty, thank you so much for reaching out. I really appreciate you so much. And thanks, Eddie, for giving me the call, and Piper for the breakout room and giving me the lay of the land. You know, it really just takes a lot to put this meeting on, and we just do it so well. I am a grateful member of Pacific Group. I came to Pacific Group about, I don't know, first or second week of February to the Saturday Night Way of Life meeting. And I came to you on a relapse after 21 years of sobriety, and I could not get it together. I took a newcomer chip Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, somewhere in between there. It's all fuzzy. Sobriety stuck. I walked into Saturday night, arms crossed. I'm a big girl. Most of you know I'm over 6 feet. I have a big presence, and I walked in arms crossed, and who but Terry Wiggum is just like, hi. I'm like, oh, what do you want? Why are you here? And thus started my journey. I dove right in. You know, my experience with my previous sobriety kicked in, and I knew what to do. I knew how to acclimate myself. But I was kind of like, I don't really want to do what you guys do. Like, I really want to stay sober, but I don't know about this yard stuff or these watches or any of that. And so off I go to the yard, because I also too am a people pleaser, and I don't want you to not like me. And I need this group in order to stay sober. And so I go to the yard, and I don't know, I think I cussed, and they stopped the volleyball game, and they're like, well, you have to put a dollar in the bucket. And I was like, well, I guess we're not going to play then. And then they made my daughter cry. And that even, that made me mad. And I think I was ready to take out Diane Giles, Yvonne Schulte. I was ready to take them all out. Like, it was interesting. But I kept coming back, because my pride, my ego was like, I'm not going to let them direct what I do or where I go and blah, blah, blah. And so stubbed my journey. So my sobriety birthday is February 1st of 2013. I do want to take a moment to wish my very good friend Amber M. a happy 4 years sobriety. You know, I often feel like this isn't a big deal, and that it's just something that everybody can just get, right? We just walk into the rooms and you do what we do and you stay sober. But that's not exactly the truth. It requires for me to do a lot of work. And sometimes I'm just on that fence. You know, I have an issue with my honesty. I often rest on my laurels and what I think I know, and it gets me in trouble. And then I start to think about me and me and me, and it's all about me. And then I stop calling my sponsor. Hi, Joyce. I love you so much. I do. I really do. It snowballs when I'm not actively working a program. I act out. And for me, it's never enough. It's never enough. Gallons, pairs, megapixels, RPMs, inches. It's just never enough. I think I've gotten a total of 7 tattoos in the last year. But I'm not drinking, and piercings, right? I got my whole ear pierced over here. I am the alcoholic the real alcoholic that they talk about in the book. And we just read it, the other night. I do insane things, but when I'm not drunk, and that's the crazy part for me, it's like, that's where the alcoholism for me still kicks in, because I still do these things while drinking. Couple of key points. I had a child in sobriety, my first sobriety. I was 10 years sober, and we did the Lord's Prayer, and he was across the room, and I was like, yeah, that's him. And and she's now 18 years old. She's in college. I often say that I don't do anything right, but I think I want to give myself a little bit of kudos. And of course, Alcoholics Anonymous is the main kudos for helping me to raise that child. She is a good girl, and I really don't deserve that. I put my mother through absolute hell. As a child, I was a delinquent. I'm the type of alcoholic that drinks in dirty, nasty alleys and in, hotel rooms with mattresses on the floor with my cute little designer purse, and on 6th and San Julian or wherever I was down there. That's where my alcoholism takes me. And when I'm not working the program, when I'm not actively involved, that is how I actually feel about myself. And it is not the truth. I'm very grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a little weepy too. I love isolating. First of all, I'm like totally down with this COVID mess, right? I could stay in my house all day long and not worry about it. But I had to get out. I was giving back. My relationship with my mother has greatly improved. And so I was going to the store for her, and one of her runs is Costco. And I remember I was there and I was in such a bad place. I wanted to drink so bad, so bad. And I ran into Marty, and he's with another cat with him. And Marty was like, "Can I give you a hug?" And I got to tell you, like, that completely saved my life, Marty. I know you said it saved your life, because I was the first person that you saw like after lockdown, but you really have no idea what that did for me. And I am grateful. I'm a hard ass sometimes, and I try to pretend like nothing bothers me and I got this. But I need Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'm just not right without it. I'm not right. I'm taking people out in parking lots. I'm fighting with men who are bigger than me. I'm mouthy. I'm just nasty. I'm foul. I'm mean. I'm considerably better now, thanks to a little bit of work that I've done. Still so much more work to do. And here's the short plug. I know I always do this, right? It's like, oh, the plug for God, but there is a big God. And all I need to know, it is not me. And then I have to put Alcoholics Anonymous first in everything that I do, because without it, I'm completely toast. There's so many of you that I love. Christine Wilson, hi. Amber, happy birthday. Mercedes, I absolutely love you to death. Joyce, all of you, if I've forgotten you, don't worry. Monique, thanks for your text. I hope you got back on. And thanks everybody for listening. Have a great meeting.
Thank you, Karen. Right, is Linda M.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm Linda Mihok, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm really, really grateful to be here tonight. Little different setting, but that's okay. You know, we meet life where it is. My sobriety date is November 3rd of 1980. Last month, I celebrated 40 years of continuous sobriety, and every minute, every moment, every day is a gift of sobriety. And I want to thank Marty for asking me to come and speak. Thank you, Marty. To Georgia for her lovely email, and Morgan and all of you have a service commitment here. And of course, big love to my sponsor, Sharon C. We are step into our 29th year of her sponsoring me. And, you know, I love you and I appreciate you. I want to welcome anyone that's new here tonight. I know that, you know, I didn't go to my first AA meeting to get sober. I went to get the guy I was with out of the meeting because I figured you'd teach him how to drink, right? And we'd leave. And yet, you know, I was drinking right along with him. But anyway, we'll get to that. But I want to welcome the new people. And I know, you know, I remember looking at the steps and traditions and thinking, God, that's Greek to me. And I am Greek. And I thought, I'm not doing that, right? Because I always wanted the easier, softer way. And there used to be a woman that worked at Sacramento Central Office. I live near Sacramento. And she was about 90, and she was still, you know, volunteering at Central Office. And I would volunteer at, you know, this after I got sober. And her name was Pearl. And she was feisty. And I'd love it when she'd be there in the days I'd be in Central Office, because somebody would call, and often they would say, well, I don't know. Do you think that I'll fit in Alcoholics Anonymous? And she said, honey, we got bikers, bankers, boozers, and bimbos, and I'm sure you'll fit in somewhere. I thought, wow, Pearl's bold. But it's true, you know, no matter how far down the scale, and there's a lot of love here. And one of the greatest gifts I've been given when I initially came to AA was hope, because I was hopeless. And it's not my life today. You know, I'm hopeful. And so just a little bit of background about me. I'm the youngest of four children. I grew up in a typical 50s family. My mother was a daughter of Greek immigrants. She was full Greek. My father was French and Cherokee, and they were passionately in love. And the youngest of four children, I was a baby of the family. My oldest sister, who was about 6.5 years older than me, she was beautiful. I was her little chubby, frumpy sister. And she was beautiful and busty, and all the boys were hanging out. She won a local beauty pageant, and then she was in the Miss California pageant. I mean, how do you compete with that? And she lost. And I still get kind of a thrill out of saying that to you. Sorry, but I do. And, you know, I was the apple of my dad's eye, and you know, before I got sober, it wasn't like that. I took my first drink when I was 11 years old, and I thank you, Karen and Eric, for your talks. And I related so much to Eric, and I related to Karen, and that's the identification that we share here. And, you know, my brother stole some booze. My parents were out of town. It was beer. I didn't like the way it smelled, looked, felt, tasted, none of it. And boy, but when it got to where it was going, I was Miss California. I was out of my way, you know, give me the runway, I'm going. And when Eric said he blacked out from the beginning, I was 11 and I drank so much that I blacked out. I got sick all over myself, and I didn't realize that till the next day. My brother had to tell me how I acted. He said, you were crazy. He said, I'd never seen you like that. And you know, and I was just getting started. And by the time I was, in school, I was an accelerated student. And let me tell you, being smart didn't get me sober. In fact, it might have stood in the way when I was drinking. I was a straight A student, except for a B in self-control in elementary school. And I was 16 when I graduated from high school. I was part of an accelerated program, and I got a job and I moved out. I got an apartment with a couple girls, and they didn't drink like I did. They drank, but not like me. And I know that by the time I was 19, I am exactly what the book talks about. I had lost the ability to control my drinking. Now, when I want to back up, when I was 6 years old, my brother, our schools were next to each other, and he would always come after school and he would walk me home. We were three blocks from the school. Well, this particular day, it was in May, he didn't show up. And he was 2 years older than me, and I ended up walking myself. And when I got across the street, this car had been following me, and this man in a car, and he was talking to me as I walked along the street. And I was taught not to talk to strangers. And of course, when I drank, that all went to hell in a handbasket. But he kept talking to me, and I was afraid. And then he ended up pulling his car in front of the sidewalk and blocked me, and then told me to get in the car. And this neighbor lady showed up. She knew my parents, and she pulled up and she started screaming at him, and she put me in her car and took me to her house, called the police. And I got to tell you, I don't think that's what made me an alcoholic, but what did happen for me was that it set this fear inside of me in motion that I just could not get rid of. I always thought that man was going to come back and get me. And I was just a young kid, and you know, when I took that first drink, that fear that I had felt was gone, and I drank for effect. And so by the time I'm 19, I'm a full-blown alcoholic, but I don't know it. And that's one of the things, you know, I love the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, to be over 40 years sober, and one of the coolest things for me is that because of the people I am surrounded by, who like Clancy used to talk about, the pockets of enthusiasm. One of the wonderful things about being this long sober is I'm still so excited about being sober, and I love AA. It just gets bigger and bigger for me. And one day out by the pool, this man popped his head over a patio fence. He offered me a drink. And I said, sure, that's how easy it was to get in my life. And I remember him saying, I'll be right back. I got to go buy it. And I thought, my God, my first thought was, if you offer someone a drink, you should have it right here, right now. And, you know, it's cunning, baffling, powerful, and it's patient, because I waited, you know, free booze. And man, I'm waiting. And he came back, and you know, I came to in his apartment, don't remember much, but it was kind of obvious what went on. And I was beginning behavior that night, and that was, I justified it all. I headed for his apartment door, went up to I lived upstairs, and on the way up, I was thinking, I got to move. And, but I didn't. The next day I was back at his door, and I said, you don't understand, I'm not really like that. And I remember telling my first sponsor that story. She said, well, honey, what are you like? She said, because let me tell you something about Alcoholics Anonymous. And Eric said it, you know, that you aren't what you say around here, you're what you do. And, you know, you judged yourself by your intentions, but the world judges you by your actions. I'd never heard things like that when I first got a sponsor. And you know, that man must have believed me. Life went on, and he was 10 years older than me. He'd been divorced, but he was Catholic, and I guess you couldn't get married in the church again. So we went to Reno, Nevada. I'm baptized in the Greek Orthodox Church, and but he didn't want to do that. So we went and were married in the judge's chambers in Reno, Nevada. We took about 30 of our drinking friends. I had a mouth on me that wouldn't quit. I'd been drinking a good part of the day. I wasn't drunk. I don't think they'd have married us if I was drunk. But standing in front of the judge with all our friends and my parents, I noticed that he only had one arm. And I thought, wow, you know, I started thinking, wow, we're in Reno, you know, gambling, whatever. And I said, oh my God, look at him. He looks like a slot machine. And oh my God, everybody was just like, oh my God. And you know how we are. I had to cover it up. And And anyway, at the end of the ceremony, I was shocked because this judge, Judge Moscone, I know his name because I had to make amends to him. He walked right by me. I was a bride. He didn't even congratulate me. And he walked up to the man I just married and he said, good luck, you SOB, because you're going to need it. And I thought, oh my God, I was so insulted. And he was right. And, you know, I thought that after the way that man and I got together, everything always started with alcohol and it ended with alcohol. And I thought we'd have this loving, faithful, trusting marriage. And that wasn't going to be the case because when I, you know, in my alcoholism, when I'm here, I got to be over there. And when I'm there, I got to be over there. And you know, about a year or so later, I got pregnant with our first child and I didn't stop drinking. I stopped smoking, but I was also a binge drinker. I was an everywhere drinker. I was a bar drinker and I didn't stop drinking and I ended up being rushed to the hospital and I gave birth to a son and he was born prematurely, but he lived and then he died about an hour later. And, you know, I know that in my drinking, I was destined as an alcoholic without spiritual tools that are given to us, you know, keys to the kingdom for fun and for free, that I was destined to do what I had always done, and that was go home and have another drink. And 2 years, I'm putting baby bonnets on the dog. I won't let anybody touch the baby's room, and I am in it. And no one, they just can't help me. I can't stop. I don't want to stop. And so they took me to a psychiatrist. And, you know, my family was saying, Linda, can't you see what your drinking is doing to you? And all I could think of was, can't you see what it's doing for me? God, you know, I couldn't imagine. And the book talks about it, life with or without. I couldn't imagine it without, because for me, it was like breathing in and out. And this is, none of this was, I think, what God intended for me or my family. My family, I had this good family. And so I see the psychiatrist. I saw the guy who wrote the book, I'm Okay, You're Okay. And when I left there, I never felt okay. And it wasn't his fault. It's because I wouldn't talk about my drinking, because you're not taking it from me. And so they said that I had severe depression and anxiety, and I started having panic attacks, and I kept drinking, and then they put me on pills, and so I'd drink, and I'd take the pills, and then it wouldn't work, and at least what I considered working, and then, you know, I started going, you know, I was in the bars all the time, and I wouldn't come home, and all those things, and the pain and hurt that I caused the man I was married to, my family was hearing about it, they institutionalized me. And I remember I was in the lockdown ward and, you know, an alcoholic, insecure egotist. I'm in the lockdown ward in the nut ward. And I remember them saying, we're going to the day room. And my first thought was, well, if there's a day room, there's gotta be a night room. I want that room. I mean, I was crazy. And all I could think of was the guy next to me was, why does he have better paper slippers than me? I clearly had failed to see my dilemma. And I came home from there and nothing changed. Nothing changes if nothing changes. I remember Johnny saying, if you want to keep getting what you're getting, keep doing what you're doing. And I couldn't stop. I'm having these severe panic attacks. I'm going to the bars. I don't know how to go home. I get pregnant again with our second child. I don't stop drinking. He's born prematurely, 6.5 months. He weighs 3 pounds and I'm guilty and I'm remorseful and I know it's my fault and I'm afraid he's going to die. And I'm just, all I can do is have another drink. And he lived and they sent him home to me at two and a half months old. And, you know, I love what it says in the book, you know, A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, and B, that probably no human power could relieve us of our alcoholism, and God couldn't would if he were sought. But to me, if is the biggest little word in the big book, you know, if, because it puts the responsibility on us. If he were sought, if we were painstaking about this phase of our development, and, you know, no human power, not a mother, not a father, not a brother, a sister, or a baby. you know, that this didn't come, wasn't going to happen by stopping or quitting or complying. And I knew nothing about surrender. I knew nothing about that. And, you know, he came home and I was a good mom for about 6 months and I'm back in the bars and I'm not coming home. And my father's crying. And I'm putting the light out in their eyes and I broke my dad's heart. And I'll never forget the day that he came. Then my husband and I split up and I'll never forget the day my father came to my home and he banged on the door and he said, Lenny, call me Lenny. I'm worried about you, sweetie. Please open the door. And I said, go away and don't come back. And, you know, that wasn't the relationship that I wanted, but it's where alcoholism took me. And I had wanted to work in law enforcement. I took the written test for SAC PD and I passed it with flying colors. And then I didn't show up for the physical agility test. And because it was the morning after my 29th birthday. And prior to that, you know, I was just, my life was being shredded a little bit at a time. And then all those sordid places and the tremendous guilt, which was causing, I believe, those panic attacks, which I came to understand for me, went not until I got to you that it was absolutely had to do with a direct distance from a loving God. And I started calling my own ambulance because people wouldn't pick up the phone to me anymore. And my husband was fed up. And 911, they have to answer. I mean, way it works. And they'd come and get me and then they'd take me to the hospital and they'd shoot me up with something and send me out the door. But see, that's not a solution to the permanent problem of my alcoholism. And by the winter of 1979, I was unemployed, unemployable. That man and I were split up. I was, you know, men and drinking and just dragging my son through it all. And I was living in an English tutor home, beautiful English tutor home, and I was drinking in the Nighthawk Bar in Del Paso Heights in Sacramento. And let me tell you, it's not a classy joint. It's a dive bar. Bad. It's bad. And you know, back then, my biggest worry was, you know, wearing my best tube top to the bar. And my goals weren't set very high. And I had got hooked up with this crazy motor cop and he drank really hard and I was drinking right along with him, but I was always pointing the finger at him and he had a motor officer partner. Now, you know, all these hopes and dreams that I had were gone. They were gone. I had a music career that went, my work life went. I mean, I've worked in the music business for about 30 years, everything went. And my son was neurotic and it was just, you know, it's like the four horsemen. I could not see myself crawling out of it. And this motor cop knew a guy named Bob and he used to talk about him all the time. And, you know, years ago, I was talking at a convention in Canada and there was a guy from Texas there who spoke and he was a Saturday night speaker. And he said, you know, if you're here tonight and you're new and you don't think that you're sober through some divine intervention, we beg of you to think again. Because after all, 24 hours before every single one of us got here, none of us knew we were coming. And that was the case for me, because when that man walked through the door that night, I had my drink in my hand. I think I had my nightgown on. I'm not sure. Penwa, I think they called it a Penwa. Oh my. And he walked in, he said, hi, I'm Bob and I'm an alcoholic. And I said, that's too bad. And they took that guy to a meeting and I went and drank and came back to his house at 2 a.m, woke him up and said, what was that AA meeting like anyway? And he said, you know, it was great. Oh, and there were lots of pretty women there and I'm going back, because he was trying to make me jealous. And I said, well, you know, I didn't have relationships. I took hostages. And I said, I'm going to that ANA meeting because none of those women are going to get you. You're mine. And we were nuts. We were crazy. I mean, I was crazy. And following Saturday night, I left my son with a bunch of people in my house drinking. I had been drinking. I went down to that meeting above a bus station, clunked up those two flights of stairs in my best bar outfit. The guy at the podium started waving me to a seat and And then I looked at all of you, and I'm, you know, I'm a bar girl. I'm an end of the bar girl who judges all the other women who's just like them. And I'm looking at you, and I'm thinking, oh God, I'm in so hell. Because you look nice and you're dressed nice, and I was, you know, my best bar outfit. But here's what happened for me: the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, the love that I've received since the minute I walked through the door. And these women surrounded me and circled their wagons, right? And I'm just trying to get to him across the room. And they said, oh, honey, welcome to A, got a big book, got a this, got a that, got a home group. And I'm like, get back. I'm not here for me. I'm here for him. And it was almost in unison. They said, him who? Like they had practiced it. And then he turned around and he looked like Charlie Manson on a bad acid trip. I mean, you know, God, anyway, that's a whole other story. But they said, oh my God, we'll all sponsor you. And I followed him around so you women wouldn't get him. I was on a mission for God. And then Bob's wife, Lori, happened to be sober, and she put 20 questions in front of me, and I began to cry. And I said, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. She says, you think? And I got sober, and, you know, I started, she gave me a lot of structure, this meeting, that meeting, you're going to be a greeter. I was a greeter at my second meeting, and I didn't want to do it, but she told me one of the very foundations of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that you must be willing to take action long before you believe in it, that it is your actions that will change your thinking. You can't think your way into sober living. You have to live your way into sober thinking. And I didn't understand it, but I did it. She said, put one foot in front of the other. I want you to show up early and stay afterwards. And I wasn't a coffee drinker. And we were always going to coffee. And I thought, God, how sober can you get? And, you know, I can't imagine what my life would be like today had I not met you. And Lori sponsored me for, you know, a little over 11 years. And at one point she said, go get a job. You got to get a job. You're not going to turn your will and your life over to the county. You're going to get a job. You're not going to stroll to the mailbox and pick up a check that you didn't earn. And I said, oh, you said the four-letter word work. I'm going to be a Greek sobriety goddess. And she said, go get a job or get another sponsor. So I got a job as a cocktail waitress in the bar I had drank in. And she was just crazy. You know, I made her work for a sponsorship. And I ended up loaded. I said, I don't feel like drinking. She said, it's not over yet, honey. And she was right. And, you know, I took a year cake when I didn't have a year. And I was told if your sobriety dates a lie, everything after that will be too. And so I was confronted. Somebody cared more about my life than my feelings and said, you better go to that sponsor and tell her the truth. I'm sure she's going to make you change your date, but you're going to start over. You want to live or you want to die. That's how they talked to you back then. You know, do it or die, honey, do it or die. And one night after a meeting, I still had these little Valium floating around in my coin purse. They weren't even in a bottle. I hadn't taken them, but just in case I hyperventilated, because 10 years of going in ambulances, they knew me on a first name basis in the emergency room. That look where the nurses look at you like, oh, here she comes. She's crazy. Cause I was. And one night after the meeting, and we had coffee, and there was a woman in the program standing next to me, and she was tough. She wasn't my sponsor. But in that moment, she saved my life. She cared more about my life than my feelings to tell me the truth. She saw those Valium, and she leaned over, whispered in my ear, and said, you know, honey, I don't know about you, but those Valium might just be the driest martini you've ever had. And P.S., we do this through prayer and meditation, not prayer and medication. I said, I'll flush them down the toilet when I get home. She dragged me into that bathroom, and she said, again, you want to live or you want to die? She said, because women like you, you're a liar. And she said, you better get it together. I mean, I know that sounds harsh, but I understood. And I'm a bar girl. That was a language I understood. And she said, you know, you want to live or you want to die, you know? And I flushed him down the toilet. She made me, and I had to pull the handle and everything. And then I was terrified. And about 6 months after that, and this is, you know, the thing about the truth of the people that are the voices bigger than our own head, who care enough to be strong and loving. Sharon is a loving sponsor, strong and loving sponsor, you know, and it's worked for me. And about 6 months later, I'm sober. I had changed my sobriety date and I was hyperventilating. and a lot of things I was making, man, a lot of things were coming up, and I started to hyperventilate, and I thought, oh my God, you know, in this relationship with God, I believed in God, but I hadn't quite started trusting God yet, because trust, you know, is the action. Action is a trust that that I believe we haven't got. We put that trust into action. And that night I was going to hyperventilate, and I went to call 911, and I didn't want to call 911, but I was terrified, because I always felt like I was having this bad heart attack. And I called this woman, Louise, and Louise had a Southern accent, and she was hard. She was tough. And I don't know why I called her. But anyway, I got this wall phone. I call her. I said, Louise, I'm hyperventilating, and I'm going to call 911, but I don't want to. What do I do? What do I do? And she said, I'll never forget it. She's dead now. She died sober. Linda, get down on your knees and ask God to help you stop doing this to yourself. And she hung up on me. And I stood there in that moment. And there's that moment, you know, those spiritual experiences, that surrender in that moment, that someone cared more about my life than my feelings, that I said, God, help me. And I got on my knees and I said, God, please help me stop doing this to myself. And from that moment to this, I've never hyperventilated. Who knew? And, you know, life in sobriety, you know, I went through the steps. I had to make amends. I was a menu stealer, the good carved ones out of the really classy restaurants. I was 5 years sober. I was going to Hawaii. I'd stolen them from Hawaii, brought them home in my suitcase in 1975. And my sponsor said, aren't you going to Hawaii? You told me you found those menus in your garage. I said, yeah. She said, take them back. I said, excuse me? I said, I stole them 10 years ago. That place probably isn't even open. She goes, you want to stay sober? You want to get drunk? Take them back. So I put them in my suitcase and I went up to that restaurant. It was a different name, but it was still there on Maui. And I went up and I asked for the manager, and this 25-year-old kid comes out and I go, can I talk to you for a minute? He goes, sure. And we went up, took him aside. And I told him my spiritual path. I didn't say I was an AA, but I said, I stole these and I was wrong, and I hope you can forgive me. And he goes, wow. And I thought, oh, thank you, God. He gets it. And then he goes, man, the prices have really changed. But it doesn't matter what he thought, because when I walked out of that restaurant, I stood a little taller in the world, as my sponsor Sharon says. And, you know, I've been married and divorced in sobriety. That's how Sharon became my sponsor, was that I was going through a divorce from a man I met, and we got married, and we were two good people, but not good together. We just weren't good together. And Sharon was talking at a convention, and I was in a lot of pain. This man and I were getting a divorce. He wasn't being very nice about it. And he already had a girlfriend, and she was pregnant, and I have a son. Sharon had a son. Clancy came and talked at this conference that I was chairperson of, and Sharon was also one of the speakers, and I asked her if I could have breakfast. My sponsor, Lori, had not left AA, but she had moved and kind of wasn't being as active as she had taught me. And I sat down with Sharon, and I asked her, I didn't ask her to sponsor me, but I asked her what I should do. And she said, well, I'm not sure yet. I'll probably give you some writing to do. But she took my hands and her hands and looked me right in the eye. And she said, but what I know is you can't stay in this kind of pain. And I didn't do what she asked. And then I finally did it. And then she was speaking up in Oakland, and I called her, and I went and I listened to her talk. And then I took her to lunch, and I asked her to sponsor me. And I can't put in words how my life changed even more through her sponsorship and making even more amends and just walking towards being a whole human being. And, you know, I've sponsored women since I was eight months sober. And I was taught here that no matter what, when AA calls, you go and you give it your whole heart, and don't be selfish and self-centered and only do it when it's convenient for you. You have to be willing, especially when it's inconvenient. And that's been my path. And you know, Sharon gave me more structure. And that's when I started coming when I could to Pacific Group. And I was mesmerized and fell in love with it. And you know, and the wisdom of Clancy being passed down to Sharon, and watching my sponsor walk through the things that she has with dignity and grace and just leaning in and learning so much. And I know that without you guys, my life would have been so much different. You know, that man and I got divorced, and later, you know, I met a man at a meeting. I went up and told him I thought he was really cute. He told me he thought he was going to be sick. I said, I don't have that effect on me. But he found out he was really shy, and we went out. And anyway, we got married, and this Sunday we'll be married 28 years. He's 32 years sober. Thank you. Is that 5 minutes? I have 5 minutes left. I don't know how much time I have left. Oh, 5 minutes. Okay. I don't? I do. Okay, 5 minutes. You know, when we were married about 5 years, and we were just crashing into each other, and we separated. And I remember I called Sharon, and this is the value of a sponsor that brings the principles to her sponsorship. And I said, I'm divorcing him. And she said, no, you're not. And I was mad. I said, why not? She said, you're going to wait. I said, for what? She said, you're going to wait to see if he lets God work in his life. And I don't want you to walk around with him in your back pocket. And about 3 weeks later, he served me with divorce papers. And I bet you can guess who I was mad at. I called Sharon. I said, well, great. I just got served. She goes, well, I'm sorry it's working out that way. She said, I said, I could have been first. And see, I came to understand that my pride and my ego will run me. And, but, you know, he got a new sponsor and we started working together. And, you know, we worked through it all. And our life today is so good. You know, I sponsor women. I've never told anyone no. I have a home group, Folsom Big Book Group, every Monday night. I've been there over 20 years. You know, just service, and I'm retired. I was given a great retirement. I was retired from the government. I was a government analyst. Great retirement, lifetime medical paid for, you know, lived in my home 38 years, and wow, I couldn't not have gotten there without you. And, you know, my son, he's 47 now, 45, 46, 47. And he had a beautiful daughter, our granddaughter. And last year we all went to the Mediterranean. Herlaya. You know, in 2016, my mother died, and she had an accidental death that was pretty painful for her and very painful for our family. And she was almost 94, but feisty and beautiful. And 4 months after that, my brother died suddenly. And then a month and a half after that, my husband's mother died. So we lost 3 family members in 5 months. And it was the hardest time I've ever experienced sober. But what you've done for me is trained my feet. And you've taught me the difference between grief and self-pity. And you've taught me about dignity and grace. And standing in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous, turning around to face myself through the steps and pass it on. And that whatever God's will for me is that I might have a responsibility to meet life where it is, life on life's terms. And prayer, you know, I'll tell you, praying to this God I couldn't see, touch, or feel, my God is so much bigger now. I can't tell you the moment I surrendered. I don't know what day it was all those years ago, but I can tell you what it felt like. It's like there was a change in me from the inside out, through that psychic change, through the spiritual action of these steps. And my life, I can't even imagine the life that I had. I can't imagine, because there's light now, and there's hope, and there's happiness. And, you know, we've traveled and we live and we both love sobriety, my husband and I. I don't know. There's probably so many other things that I wanted to say, but my time is almost up. So, Marty, thank you. I want to say to the newcomers, when I got sober, you know, I was institutionalized. I had electric shock therapy. I mean, I was going nowhere. And I got to tell you, I had a lot of impossibilities. And then the miracle happened. The miracle is Alcoholics Anonymous. The impossibilities take a little bit longer. Thank you for letting me share tonight. Thank you.
AA birthdays at this meeting. We define sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, or anything which would affect you from the neck up. If you're a regular attendee of this meeting or like to take a cake with us, please email our scribe, Ann P., at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org.
Hi, everybody. My name's Ann, and I'm an alcoholic.
And please email her by 6:30. Otherwise, you'll have to wait until the following week to get recognized. We have several birthdays tonight. This week, we've asked one of our regulars to sing us a happy birthday song.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, folks. Our birthdays this week are, I gotta move my screen here. We have 4 years for Amber M. Her sponsor is Larry B. We have Claire M. for 6 years. Her sponsor is Barbara B. We have James M. for 7 years. His sponsor is Rich B. We have Annie P. for 13 years. Her sponsor is Lydia W. We have Lulu A. for 20 years. Her sponsor is Quincy W. Ron W. for 23 years. His sponsor is Patrick S. David A. for 24 years. His sponsor is Tom B. Russ C. for 44 years. His sponsor is Joe S. We had 8 birthdays for a total of 142 years, the average being 17.75. Happy birthday, all of our celebrants. We have a custom at this group of donating $1 for each candle on our birthday cakes. At the end of the year, this candy money is our candle money. It is our contribution to AA organizations worldwide. If you wish to participate in this custom, please email our treasurer, Betty H., at treasurer@pacificgroupla.org. Underneath.